Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome back to our recording. Welcome back to another episode. I am your host, and today I have a returning guest who I had the privilege to spend the evening with recently in San Francisco at Global Sake 2026. One of the most unique events that this industry has produced that I've seen. It's a very unique event. Talia Barbuch is the founder of Global Sake and LocLearn, a global first product and growth executives with a track record for LinkedIn, BitMonkey, Google, and someone who genuinely live the principle that she teaches. When we last spoke on episode 199, and you are a returning guest, and I appreciate you appearing one more time on the Localization Fireside Chat, she left us with a line that most companies go global, but very few are built for it. And that line sort of got me thinking, and I got thinking about it as I participated in the event in San Francisco as well, because you can see that reflection in what's going on in around us, either on the customer side or on the industry companies that they're serving those industries outside the localization industry. Since then, she has taken that mission even further. So it's only been a few weeks since we recorded last time, but I see a lot of progress here. Today, we're going to unpack what happened at Global Sake 2026. We have two objectives at the Adobe headquarters in San Francisco, and then to get into a little bit something really timely, which what we talked about is LocLearn, the new courses on AI-powered geoculturalization of visual assets. Talia, welcome again to the Localization Fireside Chat. Good to have you with me.
Thank you, Robin. It was so good to see you finally in person. We chatted virtually before, but it was really nice to match a body to a head. And I hope you've enjoyed it. We're still processing what just happened. It was a very stimulating event.
You know, thanks for putting this together, to be honest with you. And for the audience, it's a very unique event. This event took place on April 30th. For those who don't know, who was the first time listening to our podcast today, April 30th, 2026. It took place at the Adobe headquarters in San Francisco. By the way, it was a sold-out event, and I haven't seen in this industry yet a sold-out event. Maybe there are, and I've never heard of them. The week before, Talia sent a message that we're sold out, which is good news when you're hosting events like this, specifically for the organizers, Talia and team, mm-hmm. which worked hard on putting this event together. The format of the event for the audience, it was a networking reception at the beginning with sake tasting, by the way, which is good. I tried that. Wobbly World Live Music, but it's a multicultural musician with 25 years performing world music. And also there was an international buffet and then a five parallel expert-led roundtables. So those are the, I want to say, beside the entertainment at the front end of the event, those are also great discussion tables with various tracks. We had five tracks: platforms on AI infrastructure, data governance, people, organization and structure, product adaptive performance, and geocultural context in AI. What did you think of the evening? Mm-hmm. How did you assess what the Global Sake 2026 achieved in your eyes, in your opinion?
So I'll just say first that, you know, you put an event together and you have no idea who's going to show up, you know, and all of, and there's a lot of promise because, you know, you're signing up sponsor partners and, you know, the space, you know, I had to line up the space months in advance and all of those, and the band and all those interdependent moving parts. They all need to fit in together perfectly. But each time you put one piece of the puzzle, as you're working toward it, you have no idea whether the other pieces are going to catch up, right? And then at the end of it, they do. They always do. But you can't guarantee it up front, right? So it's always very stressful. And then this is why I was really happy that it was sold out a week before, because it gave me at least 7 days to relax and focus on just final touch-up logistics. I thought it went really well. I think the best signal, we got a lot of feedback. People loved it. But the best maybe signal is that it was extremely hard to push people out the door. Very hard. I mean, you know, we were there like at 2 p.m. The event started at 5:30. We had to clear the space by 8:30. So we had, you know, 3 hours is a good... It's a good amount of time, but people were just starting. You know, they were so immersed in the conversations. They had come out of the breakout rooms a few minutes, you know, I don't know, 15 minutes before close time. We were gonna do a roundup, recap circle, but people were just so, and even at the beginning, when we wanted to start the roundtables, people just wanted to talk to each other. A lot of people, this was kind of an annual reunion for them. They know they're not going to see their friends in another year. People travel from around the world. But also really people were just stimulated. The five roundtable tracks were very thoughtful. They were really well led and very honest and really good conversations, not just stereotypical kind of slogans thrown in the air, actually dissecting the big problems, big fears, considerations, giving some possibilities, exploring them 360. You know, people were starting to really dig in and it wasn't nearly enough time. And then when we came out of the roundtables, they just wanted to continue talking about what they've just scraped the surface of, and eventually we had to literally push people out the door, and then people just stayed outside and continued talking. So it was very interesting. And something that I heard over and over from multiple people was that the content for this event could and should have filled a 2-day packed conference, not a 3-hour evening, you know, so it was a lot of content.
That's right.
And this is something for us to know, okay, maybe we can now break it down and have some follow-ups on each of these.
Any feedback from our host?
Yeah, they were very happy.
Did they get anything out of it? Did they feel like they got something out of this that's going to help their business?
I think so. I mean, I think for Adobe, well, Adobe obviously is a global company. My partners are Priscilla Noble and Yuki Shioka. This has been about 5 years in the works. I mean, we've been talking about them hosting our past events. Where
so you don't always host it at Adobe. Every time you host it somewhere else?
Every year it's in a different location. This is the first time at Adobe. I like to have a different space. I'm kind of picky about the space. The space has to be very inspiring. And previously Google hosted us.
It was a wonderful space, by the way. That restored building was very unique. The way it was designed, the lobby, the area that you've had the meetings, and the breakout room was adjacent to where the main reception was. So it wasn't like you have to walk a distance to get to it. So.
Yes, it was for this. This is the first time I do a roundtable format, and I wanted it. I was specifically looking for an open space venue because I wanted everything to be at the same space so we don't lose people. Yep. Last time, for example, 2 years ago, it was at the Presidio, a fantastic, beautiful historic building, but it was at a blockchain company, Edge and Node. There were multiple niches, and people had to, you know, go to different niches, which was beautiful and very intimate setting. Mm-hmm. We had 250 people, but more intimate setting. The last event was hosted at Visa's global headquarters in San Francisco. Very different style, so also very flashy, you know, top floor overlooking the bay, the ATT park, a baseball park, beautiful bay views. But this year, I needed an open space. And I had been talking with Priscilla about hosting since pre-pandemic. And then pandemic hit, and Adobe has very strict security regulations. And so this is finally the first, you know, the stars aligned. And I think they got what they got out of it. I mean, they were very happy to, they were really very happy. First of all, they're amazing people. They have amazing products. They were very happy to, it's a global company that does
their podcast product. I mean, I'm in podcasting. Yeah. I'd love to see.
You should invite Priscilla. She has a lot to say. I have her regularly as a guest speaker in my Lachlan course.
Oh, she doesn't mind doing guest speaking? Maybe I'll invite her.
Very happy to. You should invite her. I'm happy to introduce. Okay. So they, you know, Adobe actually, very few global companies actually did product geofit, basically really geocultural adaptation of product experience. Mm-hmm. Adobe did that early on. When they entered Japan, first they just localized the content, and that was not enough. They also, their first kind of stab at hitting Japan was they knew they needed to adapt their, I think it was for InDesign templates for designers, but they kind of had stereotypical, you know, cherry blossom, kimono, you know, themed templates.
Yes.
Which you know, it doesn't, again, you know, we have to really, when we do geocultural, we have to be very careful to avoid stereotypical associations, right? I mean, this is just, it smells, it doesn't feel right. Exactly.
It has to feel natural.
I mean, you want to adapt, but not in, you don't want to force the adaptation. You want to make it feel right. And native. So, and then they did it right. And they did a lot of, they didn't just adapt templates, they created new templates specifically for Japanese designers in Japan. So that required for, you know, like calligraphy mentality, right? So that required for different typography in Japan, you know, geoculturalization is represented by different typography than what we have here. So
you moderated a table. You were moderating a table, track four, I think it was yours. And yes. You wanted a track on adaptive performance, product adaptive performance. What was the most surprising thing that you probably heard through the conversation that you probably came out of the rooms thinking like, oh, you know what? I'm going to highlight two or three of these ideas in my mind for the future. Anything out of the ordinary came out of that conversation?
So I prepared the content for all five roundtable tracks, and then brought in really amazing domain expert leaders.
And they're all good, fantastic. By the way. They're very good.
They were fantastic. And they all came with their discipline and their...
Jane and Gabriel did a good job, by the way.
So at the day of... Obosake is a one-person show. And basically, I had the volunteers, the interns were volunteering for the event, and that was great, great support. But, in terms of building the program, developing this entire event, I'm doing it solo. So... at the day of, I come from product, and so I prepared the content for and the themes for all roundtables, and I was going to also co-lead a roundtable for product. I couldn't because I had to go and manage logistics. However, I think the main thing that came up for the product table was people don't quite understand what does it mean. I mean, they understand product localization. And they understand that, okay, well, we need to do not just translation. We need to, sometimes transadapt, local content origination. So they understand product localization from the content side, because I think the localization industry is a little, I would even go as far as to say that for 20 years, it was pretty stagnant. And only in the last 5 years, we're seeing something very exciting happening. And I think a lot of people in localization come still from the old school of language support. And any adaptations that we do is on the language side. But we have to kind of disengage from that concept and really open it up to product management. When we talk about product, we really talk about product management. We're talking about ideation. So, what problem are we solving for when we want to build a new feature? So ideation, prototyping, user market research, then start development, design, multiple iterations, tests. And in that dev design delivery, and then finally launch, right? And now we're talking about circular launches. So the iterations need to happen on the fly. I talk a lot about product global readiness, which is more the internationalization, making it localization ready. So standardized, standardization, all the formats that we need for multilingual and all that stuff, making it multilingual, multi-geo supportive. And the second pillar is product geo fit. So now sometimes we build new features for a specific market. At LinkedIn and at SurveyMonkey, we actually build specific products only for India, only for China, that we didn't build for the US. And also optimizing the flagship product, optimizing the core funnels. Mm-hmm. The discoverability funnel, onboarding, attribution channel. How do people, where do people discover the product, how they discover, and what are the different onboarding flows based on their geolocation and based on their, so it's not just based on interface locale. And in mm-hmm. addition to geolocation marker, most importantly, and now with AI, we can do that better, is understanding user intent, understanding specific use case, and adapting the feature and the funnel scenario to that specific use case. So if you came to us from a query, or if you came to us from a distribution channel, from a content platform, or from organic search, or from an affiliate referral, your attribution channel, where, how did you discover us? And then the level of your intent, is it low or high intent? And what is your actual use case, and what is value add for you? So what are you looking for? What do you need out of this feature? And depending on your demographic, and depending on your sector, depending on your function, right? Whether you are the HR manager or the admin, or you're going to see a different scenario, a different flow in that feature. Mm-hmm. So those, and seeing that more universally, and then adapting it as needed to specific use cases and user intent. And that is a very different thinking, right? 100%. Because even in product management, we don't, so this is a new concept for product managers and a new concept for localizers. It's somewhere that sits in the intersection.
But that brings another evident question, obvious question, is that when we talk about geoculturalization, how narrow do you take that? Example, for the audience, everybody knows I was born in Lebanon, and a small country, 300 kilometers in length, and the maximum width in some places, 50 kilometers. So it's a very tiny country. However, in a small, tiny country with a population less than 5 million, you've got different, I would say, if in our lingo as an industry, different localization techniques or requirements for the north versus the south, for the city versus urban. How do you, and this is just a tiny country, but if you're doing a localization for China, for instance, much broader, much bigger country, Russia is the same idea, United States, Canada, etc., large countries. Do you zoom in on the actual segment of that country where it makes a difference? There are broad cultural commonality, if you will, for the country, but there are specific things that these pockets would be probably more of a requirement to them. Any comments on that?
Sure. I would say in one word, my answer would be adaptability. Now, we don't necessarily off the hood, right? Out of the box, we don't necessarily accommodate for all our potential use cases of the world, right? We start with a specific use case. We start with maybe with a specific geo, a specific language, but we need to build it. This is why we had, this is why Roundtable number one, platform infrastructure, architecture and integrations was so important, because it starts there, right? The foundation. We need to build an adaptive foundation, modular, with modularity, right? So that when we are ready to open up to new markets, by new markets, I mean not just geos, but also use cases, we're ready. We're ready to do that. We don't have to code freeze and refactor the code, right? We're building in a very adaptive way with API calls to different AI models or to different languages as a platform layer, geocultural context as a platform layer. You know, we have all those integrations in place. Adaptability. A lot of times also when you are a company, especially when you are a young company, you are restricted with resources and budget. And so you might, and you want to maybe just prototype, you do want to focus on a specific market and use case, but do not build it in a global standard fixed foundation that does not allow you to scale when you are ready.
And you know, for the audience who are new to this conversation, who are new to the channel, and by the way, we get close to, I want to say 65 to 70% brand new audience on this channel that interested in the topic, interested in the industry, and they want to learn. And they come in and they learn on this particular channel, which is a good news. What Talia is talking about is when you design a software, and I come from a tech background. So when you design a software and you hard code it in a way that if you want to take it to 20 languages down the road, you have to unpack everything, unpack your executables, unpack every piece of code that you've ever written, and then redesign it later to accommodate for all these languages, that would be a massive undertaking. What Talia is talking about is initially at the architectural level, when you start thinking about building a feature or building a product from the ground up, you think about it from a global perspective and you start putting the building blocks in that fashion, in that model. Then your job to take it to 5, 10, 20, 30, 100 languages down the road, it's not a massive undertaking. It's easy. It's feasible. And then you can work with your engineers and your suppliers on accommodating this much better way to handle this. And I remember one of the conversation we were having at one of the tables, I gave the example, like this is, I'm talking about like 20 years ago, almost now, you know, the example of BlackBerry, for instance, the BlackBerry, when they tried to do 20 years ago, the go global, for instance, their software was driven by one database, and that database had to be coded. And that code, for instance, code one will engage English, code two will engage French, and so on and so forth. So they built it into the database to engage these interfaces that they are in that language for that location. For that much better techniques, obviously, now.
And another example I would give from LinkedIn, for example, when we launched it was a soft launch in 2014 into China. So China is a very, obviously, very, very different market. When you start developing a product, you want to think, what problem are you solving for? Laser focused on that single value proposition. Then also, who are you optimizing the solution for? And then how do you define and measure success? So the who is very important. And when you enter China, the demographic is much younger. So for LinkedIn, addressable segment are professionals and students. In China, these are the 17 to 26, because the demographic overall is very young. And so this is the addressable segment, 17 to 26, which means so the who informs us of the what problem we solve for, because it's a young demographic. We want to solve for entry-level internship jobs. In comparison, in Germany, it's a much older generation, older demographic, and the addressable segment for LinkedIn in Germany is actually, trying to remember the race, right, but I think it was 35 to 46. So the what is going to be, we're going to optimize for career laddership, upskilling and career laddership. So it's a very different proposition. And so when we entered China, so young cohort, mobile first region, kind of isolated at that time, 2014, more isolated from the West. So that kind of informed the strategy of building an off-stack, standalone native app. Mm-hmm. And so it was a mobile app and a mobile site. So not even a website, just a mobile site for logged out and a mobile and a native mobile for a logged in state for China for the young cohort entry level internship jobs. So it was a job seeker. So that informed us, okay, we're just building a job seeker app, right? That's what we're doing for China. And at that moment, because China is a big country and because at that time it was more kind of isolated from the West, the value proposition was finding jobs within China. Yep. So it didn't need to hook it up to the back end of the database, our global LinkedIn database, right, of connection densities and job opportunities and company and all the standardized data sets that we mm-hmm. have. But then later on, fast forward about a decade, we saw that we actually grew. We had very solid adoption in China, and people now wanted career opportunities, you know, whether it's study abroad or collaborations, you know, or even jobs, you know, leaving China for jobs outside of the country. So now we needed to merge, you know, to provide to not, it was not valuable to get them to offer off-stack solutions. Mm-hmm. Now we needed to integrate the backend and the mid-tier to the global database versus to the China-only database, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So these things evolve, they're dynamic. And now more than ever with AI, you know, things, companies, strategies and needs are going to evolve drastically. And as we learn our new markets, more use cases and our, you know, usability needs are going to vary all the time. So this is why we really need to be prepared. We're not building for a specific solution. We are building for adaptability to any solution. I would 100%. Say this, you can put that in quote. This was a big.
And absolutely, you're right, because this is philosophical debate or discussion that this industry has been mm-hmm. having for 30 years. Is translation an afterthought for product mm-hmm. development, or is it at the initiation of the product development? 20, 30 years ago, 15 years ago even, it was an afterthought. You develop mm-hmm. the product, and then you go translate it. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about, what Global Saki is promoting, or at least the conference that I saw in San Francisco,
mm-hmm. yeah.
said, look, don't leave it till the end. Think about it as a cornerstone of your development procedure mm-hmm. Roadmap at the beginning, at the start. Nobody mm-hmm. nowadays develop a product for the local market that you're living in. Most people develop a product even with the local markets now. I keep saying Toronto has 125 languages spoken in a city. You can't develop mm-hmm. a product anymore just in English. Those days are gone. We live in an integrated world. We live in demographics that they're shifting. Even in the same country, even in the United States, and mm-hmm. specifically in San Francisco, you have multilinguals everywhere, and they prefer to be using products in their own language. We don't need to go to another country.
Yeah, it's global first by design.
Correct.
Right? So Correct. This is what we want to achieve, global first by design.
Now, in one of the table discussions, I think it was a track 5, had a gaming industry use case as a case study. Okay. Why gaming? I've done like several podcasts on gaming, which is very mm-hmm. interesting industry, to be honest with you, or segment of our industry.
Yeah.
But why gaming?
And by the way, you should definitely also invite Kate Edwards to your show. She's also fantastic.
Kate Edwards. I'm going to take that name.
Kate
now.
Edwards. Yes, I'll introduce you. She's also been, you know, a long time Global Saki member, and I have her all the time. So Kate comes from the gaming industry. And then Claudia and Philippe come from the streaming, TV, film, streaming industry. So from Netflix and Hulu. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about geoculturalization, obviously, you know, creative content is a natural kind of no-brainer, you know, area asset to mm-hmm. focus on. And those two assets, when you're watching a TV show or when you're playing a game, you are emotionally triggered, right? You are connected to the characters.
Yeah.
So when we do persona, you know, character or archetype and character building and storyline building, and we have all sorts of visual representations, audio, video, imagery, we have to be very careful, right? So it's not about rendering a language. You know, I'll give you an example. Even just take, isolate just one element, voice. When we do dubbing, voiceover, right? Or any voice, soundtrack, and also voice in speech in a game or in a TV show, if it's going to vary by region. So Japan, for example, you know, the pitch, the prosody, the tonality is very different, very, very different. So it would be a higher pitch tonality. The prosody is going to be completely different. In Brazil, a lot of times, let's say for commercials or even for, you know, gaming, they might prefer male over female, depending on what is the, you know, what is the scenario, and something in a much softer and low tonality of more, you know, deeper sound. So if you want to instill more confidence or more kind of trust. So the cultural expectation, expected behavior is different. What consumers expect in different regions and different cultures is very different. And so it's not just about rendering, you know, when we use AI to render voice, it's not just render it in a different language with the accent and dialect. That's not enough. We need to apply those, you know, the cultural nuance. And what Kate talks a lot about, and that's why we also brought in the gaming, is the geo mm-hmm. relevancy. So she gave a very interesting example of, you know, when you're designing a game, what is intuitive? It's the same with designing any product, right? Any consumer mm-hmm. product. Like, what is, you want to design the flow in a way that is intuitive so that the user will take the action designed for that flow, right? But if the design is not intuitive for them, they're not going to take that action. Failure, right? It's going to take mm-hmm. them longer. The session duration is going to be long and they're going to be stuck and frustrated. So she gave an example about, you know, a certain game that where the path, you know, the participants needed to follow a specific path and there was a tree and there was a blockage and it wasn't clear. You know, they needed the users to go this way, but it wasn't clear for them that they needed to go to the right. They went to the left, you know, so in a specific market, in a specific region where that was not intuitive. So, or having, you know, the wrong flags or, you know, if you're talking about, I don't know, a war game and it's, you know, who are the bad guys and who are the good guys, right? That's a big question. Yes. I mean, depending on your geopolitical point of view, right? And narrative affiliation and, you know, what feels right to you. It's perspective. The perspective is different. So there's a lot to
unpack. And, you know, it's funny you say who's the good guys and who's the bad guys. A lot of people are still trying to figure this out now, even today. Yes. In anything they do, they're trying to figure mm-hmm. out who is the good guys and the bad guys. I joke. Now, let's talk a little bit about LocLearn. Mm-hmm. And for the audience, LocLearn is a training and it teaches you principles, various principles. And right mm-hmm. now, LocLearn is running something called AI-powered geoculturalization of visual assets. And so this particular one, the instructor is Dorota Paulak, and localization mm-hmm. consultant and a founder of Localize Like a Pro. Can we talk mm-hmm. a little bit about this particular course?
Sure,
and when is
sure.
it happening? How people can participate in it, etc. I'll include all the links in the podcast.
So. Cool. Okay, so I started, by the way, the LocLearn Upskill School in early 2023, and it was designed for specifically for localization professionals to yep. upskill them and make them ready to the AI era. So we have all the courses. I mean, I started by teaching international product management, which is really global first product management. And it has all the, you know, in the PRD, in the product requirement doc, you have to include all the things, all those five table track themes, right? The platform, sure. the data, the product, the people, mm-hmm. the geocultural, all the things. And then we, you know, I invited other subject matter experts to teach other related. So Afal, for example, teaches building. So the courses are very practical, applied learning. They actually, there's a deliverable and the participants actually do, you know, they don't, it's not just theory, they actually do it. In Rafa's class, they're actually building AI, agentic AI applications for product and localization workflows, right? So very practical. And then this new course is starting on May 28th, and it's focused on geoculturalization of any visual assets, images, video, audio, avatar, and so on.
Is it May 28th? So I thought it was May 20th.
I know it was supposed to start May 21st, but we postponed it 1 week today.
Okay.
So May 28th. The website is already updated. But this is it's a three sessions on Thursday mornings, Pacific time.
Over Zoom, right? They take place over Zoom?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but it's live. It's live Zoom. All the LocLearn courses are live Zoom, and the participants are quite savvy. So it's open for anyone, and not just from localization industry, really anyone. No need to have any pre-requirements. But it's to get people up to speed with practical applied learning.
Okay. And so do they get any certification at the end, Talia?
Yes. Yes. All the LocLearn courses, they get the, you know, certificate of course completion and the specific deliverable, right? So they actually, and usually people join Some people just join because they just want to know, you know, they want to apply, you know, have those additional skills. Yep. And some really, they need to deliver that in their job. And so the job description has just changed. Now they have to integrate everything with AI. Yeah. So they need to quickly learn. No one is teaching them. You know, they just say, oh, now there's AI, so do that with AI now. But then, you know, they're not really set up for that.
And by the way, for the audience, so the price is $500 US, am I correct? And also, if you get a group of three, you save 20% unless things have changed. And there is a code, we'll put it into the description as well, visualteamed20, that would give you the discount. And you can include that in the registration and you'll get that discount. It is very interesting, the timing of this particular course.
Can I just add?
Go ahead.
Oh, just to add, so there is the group discount, which is not time bound, although the course starts, you know, in 3 weeks. But there's also, I want to offer a special discount for you and for folks on your show listening to you.
Oh, great.
And it was also extended for the participants of the event, which you were there. It's a Global Sake VIP, and that code is Global Sake VIP 20, and it's also 20%, and it's and it's not dependent on a group. You can just sign.
Absolutely. Well, great. Well, thanks for offering that on the show.
And, but that so, but that does expire on May 20th. So
expire on May 20th. So I'm going to try to publish the podcast between today and tomorrow.
Thank you.
By the time we finish here, we'll probably start working on the editing and we'll push that out before the end of the evening or tomorrow morning, the latest. But yeah, no, I appreciate your generous offer. What's it called? The Sake VIP 20. Is that what the code is?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Global Sake.
Global Sake 20 VIP.
VIP 20. Yeah.
20. Yeah. Global Sake VIP 20. If you are an avid listener to this show, use it when you are subscribing or when you're registering for this particular course, which is I highly recommend, to be honest with you, for those in, you know, I'm not just saying that because I talk to a lot of people all day and many people are interested in learning. Many people are interested in career change. Many people are doing something right now that they don't like and or they're not happy or they see a different opportunity out there. You got to learn. You got to broaden your horizon. You got to go out and upgrade your skills. And there are many ways to upgrade your skills. There are many ways you can participate in learning in a variety of ways. This is one of them, and I highly recommend that. If you are want to, if you want to cover for things like tools that this particular course will be covering, like Midjourney, you guys have heard a lot about Midjourney, for instance, Nano Banana, a Gemini product, Genspack, Leonardo AI, many of those image generating tools are out there that people pretend to know how to use them, and not necessarily you do effectively, efficiently how to use them. The way you should be using them and the prompting that goes wrong, how do you get it to produce what you actually want to produce? I think that's what the course is going to be covering.
Yes. Yes. So
my,
we'll be.
My partner sales there, Talia, tell me to stop anytime.
No, that's great. So we will be working, experimenting, and actually creating. So it's both for creating new images and adapting existing ones. For different markets and geoculturalization, and we'll be using Midjourney, Nano Banana, Genspark, Leonardo AI, Ideogram, that's for images, and for video, voice, avatar, we'll be using HeyGen, 11 Labs, and Synthesia. A lot of, each tool is good in something, you know, each tool has a different expertise. So it's good to mix and match.
Of course. Now, one of the things is like I'm wondering about is the timing. Mm-hmm. Why now? Like, why did you select it to launch the course now? And what is the gap that you saw in the market that you thought, I think we can use this course right now? Is there a demand for it? And, you know, when people take the course, is there an opportunity for them out there to utilize this course, either in their job or a brand new job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyone that deals with localization or product development design, UX research for global, for worldwide usability, relevancy, needs to know how to use AI tools for everything, for multimodal, right? I mean, our event was focused on global first, multilingual, multimodal, so that we can really cover all grounds in all assets. The reality is that the technology is here, the opportunity is here, the C-levels are expecting the professionals in their organization to use the technology to optimize and accelerate performance for their launches, but it all happened too fast and people are not trained in those things. So they can self-train, but it's difficult and it might be limited, right? So, and on top of that, they have to do their everyday jobs. BlockLearn is really, you know, and universities cannot realistically, and they are not capable for catching up and changing the curriculum fast enough to catch up to the technology. And so really this is the essence, the mission of LockLearn Upskill School is to be very that speedboat versus freight ship. So to enable a modality of training that is live. So it's live Zoom because the trainers and the participants are worldwide, but it is live. So it's very interactive. It's discussion and practice based. And teaching them quite quickly very hard skills that they can apply right away on their job or just add to their resume when they're looking for a job. We see a lot of layoffs happening now. And in order to be competitive and stay on top, you need to upskill and cross-skill. This is critical. Why now? Because we should have done it yesterday. You know, this is why now. I mean, it cannot be urgent enough. I was focused on the event first and wanted to get this course in before summer, before people leave for vacations. It's quite urgent. And I would even say that, you know, the iTools are able to render us language. And so it kind of alleviates a little bit of that translation, localization, workflow, automation, and speed and volume. AI today cannot do proficiently geoculturalization context nuance. And for that, we need to partner human agents with AI agents. We need mm-hmm. to we are not using AI. We're using AI for our specific, you know, embellishment and accuracy, but we're not relying on it for geocultural assets. We need mm-hmm. we need our human expertise. And so what are those factors and how do we best use which AI tools for what asset is what the gap is right now and what people need to know about.
Now, there is another offer, by the way, for the audience. Mm-hmm. If you take this course and you pay for the course with Global Saki and Talia's team, the participant gets 30% off all Global Saki events and are invited for free industry networking events. Mm-hmm. There is an added benefit. If you take the course and you pay for the course, you get discounts on future events with the group, Global Saki group. Now, one of the things that I'd like to emphasize, and I'd love to ask you this question as well, Talia, is the course's tagline, this is not about creating or generating pretty images. Can you unpack that for us? Because mm-hmm. most people probably thinking Midjourney, you know, and Nano Banana and all these tools, they're thinking, oh, I can use that in my, you know, I don't know, generating some images out there that they look nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you unpack that a little bit and demystify sure. that for us, if you don't?
Yeah, it's very tempting. AI can, you know, shine and polish our text and our images and videos and all our visual assets. It can embellish them and make them, and you know, many of us are not designers by mm-hmm. trade, right? And so it makes us look good. Right. And so it's very tempting to use them, but we have to use them in the right way. And we have to also know when not to use them. Right. There's mm-hmm. certain things where we should not use AI. And so how do we balance? First of all, we need to understand what are the relevant cultural and regional factors that we need to consider when we are designing or adapting our visual assets for our customers, for our use cases. And so that's the first step. And then understanding the available tools and what each tool is good for, and then starting to experiment using those tools to apply those factors to render the output that we want. You know, Nano Banana, for example, is a great tool for, you know, you can upload an image and then you can dissect specific nano elements, right? You can say, keep everything as is. The background image, because it has some text in Chinese or whatever, in simplified Chinese or it has an image that is not appropriate for Valencia, Spain, just that tiny little, people can barely see the tiny background, you know, picture that's hang on the wall behind the person in the image. Yeah. Change that to this and that, right? Or change the cap to whatever more, you know, local fashion. You can do that. But you need to know what are you doing? What do you want to do? How should you do it in a way that is not dull and exaggerated? How do you do it in the right dose that is native, that feels native?
Yeah, yeah. Now, the other thing too is this particular course covers not just static images. It also covers video and mm-hmm. things like HeyGen, 11 Lab, and a few others. And this is where we get into like subtitling versus voiceover versus visual changes in the dynamics of somebody speaking. I tried to play it around mm-hmm. with HeyGen, to be honest with you, on short video that I did on the podcast, and I ended up speaking Spanish. It turned out to be good. I'm not, yeah. you know, I wouldn't be able to judge if it's a good Spanish or bad Spanish. My Spanish is bad, mm-hmm. but at least my lips are synced with the words that I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the video piece. of the course.
Right. Well, so part of the video is a big part of the video is the audio, right?
Correct.
So the audio is very hard to get right. And some of those providers are working very hard to get that right. And that is the hardest part because, you know, it's easier to, again, to render language, to just render from language A to language B, but it's much harder to get everything, the lip sync. Okay, we figured that out now. But now to get just the right, like I said earlier, prosody, tonality, pitch, you know, do we want a female or male voice? Older or younger sounding voice, a childlike or more professional, you know, the tone more formal, more colloquial, all those things for the exact same asset depend on the expected behavior of the user, wherever they are. It doesn't matter where they are, but what is their expected behavior culturally? What is the cultural nuance that we want to, you know, adapt to? And so a lot of times we see also, so there are a lot of times, you know, we can tell, right? We can say, this feels fake. It feels AI, right? AI equals fake. Shiny, it looks, I don't know, professional, whatever, but we know AI did it, you know? And so people just, it's a turnoff, right? But when it's designed in a compelling way that is professional, but also that resonates with the feeling, you know, we are designing not for robots, we're designing for humans. Sure. We may use robots, but for humans, right? And when, as long as there are humans on the recipient end, our content, our visual content needs to resonate with them. And so that is something that where human and AI have to work together at this point.
Well, I mean, we need to satisfy the human at the end of the day. I mean, this is where, you know, I had somebody on the podcast telling me that the human needs to be in control or in charge of technology, not the other way around. And for that matter, technology needs to serve the human in terms of what they like, dislike, and how do they consume this particular content. Is it hitting home or not? Now, you mentioned earlier, like some of the, you know, don't worry, you know, if somebody's not in the industry, wants to learn, welcome to come into the industry. But initially, this course, correct me if I'm wrong, as being primarily for localization managers, designers, translators, as marketers in a well-run company. I'm not sure I saw that on your website. You may have changed it. I don't know. Should all these people be taking it together, or, you know, this list is not exhaustive, probably just a sample list, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's open for anyone. So there's no pre-requirement, right? I mean, it's really for anyone who is curious. It can be just any person who is curious about using the latest AI technologies, latest advancements to create, you know, even for personal use, right? To create fitted visual assets for whatever they want it for. I will also say that, you know, when you are using it for professional, in company settings, it is the ethics of AI is a big thing. That's something that came up at the event too, at the roundtables, and this is something that we can start building into, like, for example, audio libraries, and to create QC, so quality control of audio data to feed AI models. So we cannot just rely on the existing LLMs, existing AI models to do their trick, right? To be our trick dog. We have to make sure that what we are feeding AI is not the data that we are feeding it is accurate. And for that, we also need to ourselves, for us to do the evaluation, the assessment, right? In our human edit, post-edit level, we need to know what those criteria are. And at least to be able to identify what is wrong, because a lot of people don't even know what's wrong.
No. And, you know, ability to identify what's wrong, it's generally half the battle sometimes, right? So specifically when awareness. You get to these problems that probably close to perfect, but they're not perfect, and you try to get to perfection. Now, just bigger picture stuff right now. So since we spoke on episode 199, you obviously run Global Saki 20 Loc Learn courses, expanded Loc Walk. I want to hear more about this one. Loc Walks globally. Okay. So what is this? Actually, people, like, they go walking? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Where do they walk?
I'll tell you a secret, but you have to keep it secret.
Of course, it's a secret. It's on the podcast.
Nobody will listen, right?
Nobody will listen.
So I started Global Sake back in 2017, and I keep adding new programs. Walks started, I started it in 2022 during the pandemic, in February 2022. Or earlier, I think. I basically think, what do I want to do? What do I want to do? Today I want to take a walk. Okay, so let's develop a program for that, so that I can do it with, with fun people, and have a good time, and also make it part of my job. This is the fun part about being an independent is that you can, the job
do any
description,
program
you
you want.
write it. Right. You want to take a walk? Build a program for taking walks.
Yeah.
Being outdoors, I hate being in front of a computer all day long. Most of my work is that. And so any opportunity I can. So I make my work not be on the computer. And also, you know, it really started in the pandemic and where people were feeling very siloed and isolated. And safe, and they couldn't really huddle, but a safe way. I just thought, okay, well, what if we just go outside and we can wear a mask or we can just keep distance and we're just out in the fresh air and take a walk. And we're with like-minded people, and it's folks, again, global soccer community are cross-functional. So all relate to international to global, but cross-functional, not just localization.
And hang out together over a walk.
Hang out together. And so I just said, hey, you know, let's, I ordered sabich, you know, sabich?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I ordered the sabich. They brought it in. We went here to Fort Funston in San Francisco. I just called a couple of people. In 5 minutes, we had 30 people signed up. I said, stop, no more today. Next time, next week.
You're bringing up food, man. It's good.
I ordered in some food. We had a beautiful beach walk. We sat outside. I had a picnic. It was the best time ever. Mm-hmm. You can see photos of that on the Lock Walk page on the website. So, yeah, we have one coming up. So since then, we've been walking everywhere in... We didn't have one in Beirut, although Wada'a. Do you know Wada'a Farel?
I heard of her. I never met her yet.
Okay, so she's a great... she's a good friend of mine and a colleague of, you know, industry colleague of 20 plus years. So she's from Beirut and all her family's in Beirut. We were going to do a podcast together, Tel Aviv, Beirut, Beirut, Tel Aviv.
Oh, nice.
We have to wait longer. Every time we have to wait longer, longer, longer until we die, you know, until this issue resolves.
Yeah.
But one day we'll have a podcast together. But yeah, anyway, what did I want to say? So she did one in Chicago. And why did I bring her up?
Because of the law.
Yeah. She, yeah, we were going to do, you know, she was going to lead one in Beirut, a lock walk in Beirut. But then,
yes.
Thought, okay, then October 7 happened and it was, you know what?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
a good time.
Well, hopefully in time.
Yes, yes. But yeah, we had in Tokyo, we had in, you know, everywhere. And so we do have, the next one is actually on May 23rd. May 23rd is a Saturday morning in San Francisco.
Yeah. I'd love to invite you guys
it's
for
free. All the lock walks are free.
Mid-February lock walk in Canada. Maybe we'll do it in the Yukon where everybody can freeze.
You know, we had snow.
Don't do walks in Canada, lock walks in Canada in the winter, unless you're Canadian and you're used to it.
It's all possible. You know, we had snowshoeing. John Hayato led a snowshoeing one in Tahoe in the winter. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just,
But,
if you are not from the region, you'll find it a little bit more bothersome, I guess. So what does the rest of 2026 look like for Global Saki for you and LocLearn, I guess?
Yeah, so new LocLearn courses. So after the May 28 beginning of the AI-powered visual assets adaptation, creation, we have, we're launching also, it's already out, it's registration is already open for the level 2 of vibe coding or building, it's basically level 2 for building agentic AI applications for product and localization. But this one includes vibe coding. We're going to use the N8N platform.
Oh, wow, nice.
Also has vibe coding. You're familiar with this?
Yes,
platform?
Yes.
Great. Yeah, it's very, very intuitive.
N8N, relevance, and all these guys. Yeah.
Yes, yes, exactly. So already we had two cohorts of the building agentic AI applications was sold out. We had, I think, about 50 students in each cohort. So already about 100 folks, and then some did async too. So like 120 folks already went through that training. This new training is, it can be level 2 of that first training, but it can also be open to anyone who just wants to experiment a bit more with vibe coding. It does not require, it's with no code or zero code, no code or...
And for everybody who is listening to our conversation today, vibe coding is an exciting thing to do. You finally take control of your own application development and stop relying on IT to get you solution. And this is how you tell IT, you focus on what you do and I'll focus on what I do. And that's exactly what I did in my corporate job. So you find a shortcut to many things that you're currently doing manually. You don't have to do things manually anymore with a bit of a small amount of coding. I mean, it's not that complicated. You can put it together. You can put scripts together that solves big problems for you. And I know it's solving everyday problems for me in what I do here. So My last question, if you don't mind, from your perspective, since you've been on the product side for many years, what do you think or you wish that every product leader understood about cultural intelligence before they press that launch button?
Understand that you don't know. You know, assume, or not understand, assume that you don't know. We don't know everything. I mean, we certainly don't know everything. And we there's more that we don't know than what we do know, right? So just remembering what's vague or what's vague and what's veiled. There is more that's veiled than unveiled. And when you operate from a mindset of there are things I don't know, you are more careful, you are more considerate, you do a better due diligence, you can still use the tools to optimize your process, but with more evaluation and fact checking and be ready to iterate. We know that, yes, you're launching something now, it's V1, but there's going to be a V2 coming up very soon with all the corrections of V1, right? So, and it's just, this is our life. And this is also how we lead our life, right? Every single conversation now is spontaneous.
We're improvisation. Learning.
Exactly. Every minute of our day is improvisation. And this is how we learn, and we make a lot of mistakes on the way. And we, you know, sometimes we regress, but hopefully we
every day is a learning process. And for the audience, and building on what Talia has been just said, I was reminded by this particular customer a year ago when I was in my corporate job, told me that he doesn't need localization. He exports to various countries. He said his customers, they speak English. It's a wake up call to you. I'm not going to name any name. I'm not going to embarrass anybody. I know who you are. Give this particular episode a thought and think about what we just talked about today. I want to thank Talia Baruch for joining me today. Thank you so much for joining me again, Talia.
Thank you. Thank you. Always a pleasure. And I'm honored that you invited me back. And
anytime.
Hope to again see you in person where I'm a guest, where I don't need to host an event and we can actually.
Yeah, I'd love to spend some more time with you and speak together a little bit, talk together a little bit, because we think we've got lots in common. We can learn a lot from each other and continue this conversation going. What do you think?
We should do a panel, you know, on somebody else's conference.
Absolutely. I'd love that. I want to thank you, Talia Baruch, again for joining me. I really appreciate it. It was good seeing you in San Francisco. Good seeing you again on the podcast. Please consider this channel yours. Anytime you want to broadcast a message out to the audience, come back and love to host you just for the sake of the conversation. I really enjoy this. And to the audience, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time with us. Talia and I, we thank you so much for being part of this conversation. If you're coming on YouTube, thanks for watching us. If you're coming on the audio channels, thanks for listening in. And if you're reading the blog post, kudos to you. And thanks for subscribing. I really appreciate it. And I'll see you at the next episode. Talia, hang on. Don't leave. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
See you next episode, guys. Bye.